D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Finnegan, David Jaynes, intern Emily, all here with you today. Willie comes in with a neon-colored... Is it a windbreaker?
What is that?
It's
T-shirt?
Got a pullover.
Oh, pullover.
You know, long sleeve.
And lo and behold, white. Willie also pulls out a yellow Gatorade.
Yeah.
This is a green Gatorade.
No, that's a yellow.
Put them together. Put them together, Willie. Clearly two very different colors.
Yes. Slightly, but both on the green side.
No. That's clearly yellow.
That's green. That's yellow.
let's not even do the Gatorade thing.
Let's not pick at that stab.
This is definitely green, though. We agree on this.
That pullover is green.
This is like green. Baylor, like when Baylor wears the neon.
Mm-hmm.
They were the first team that I think I saw
Oregon.
Do it.
Oregon does that color a little
bit. Have they gotten this? There actually is yellow.
The Seahawks,
but they have that
like, color quite a bit.
The Seahawks have this in their scheme. Now, yes, absolutely.
We're not going to pick at that scab.
Yes, we're not doing
is that. This Gatorade yellow or green?
The whole show would go down the tubes.
We are going to do some scab picking later in the program. I'm going to have Titans fans. You're going to have to enter the dark recesses of your mind because I have an exercise that we're going to do, and it might be a little bit painful, but you know what? That's how we all heal, by just facing the pain head on. And we will do that. We will do that in the second hour of the program. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, will join us at noon, a little later than usual, because in our next segment, new Predators defenseman Nick Perbix will join us. Nick Perbix having his introductory news conference, I believe, as we speak. And right after he's done with that, he will hop on the phone with us at around 11:20, 11:25. So looking forward to talking to new Predators defenseman Nick Perbix. But we're going to start the show with the latest from Jeremy Fowler of ESPN. As we know, for the past several years, Jeremy Fowler has been putting together these lists. He does it in the beginning of July, which is perfect for us because we're waiting for training camp in a couple of weeks. And he surveys league executives, coaches, and scouts to help him rank the top 10 players at 11 different positions. So he started this exercise yesterday with running backs. Today is defensive tackles. And I was incredibly intrigued by this list because I wanted to see where the NFL had Jeffrey Simmons. And before I looked at where he fell on this list, I went back and looked at where he fell on previous editions of this list. And quite the snapshot in time, guys. He debuted on the list in 2021 at number 6, with an NFL general manager being quoted as saying, "No one is Aaron Donald, but he," meaning Jeffrey Simmons, "might be the closest." That was in 2021. Now, that GM may have been onto something because that season, Jeffrey Simmons had a career year, I believe 8.5 sacks. In 2022, he skyrocketed from number 6 to number 2. With an NFL scouting director saying, quote, "One of the best defenders in football, right behind Aaron Donald as far as tackles. He's the scary guy you don't want to see." And over the past couple of years, he's fallen down the list. So he was number 2 in 2022, number 3 in 2023, number 4 in 2024, and on the latest edition of this list by Jeremy Fowler, Jeffrey Simmons maintains his number 4 spot. So Jeffrey Simmons, the number 4 defensive tackle in the NFL, according to the league execs and coaches and scouts. I almost said couches. Coaches and scouts that Jeremy Fowler surveyed for this list. And I'll be honest with you guys. I was surprised to see Jeffrey Simmons still in the top 5. But it also begs the question, Derek, how much of our views of Jeffrey Simmons how much of our views are skewed by the fact that we watch him every single week? Or are football people caught up in the name recognition? They know Jeffrey Simmons as one of the top defensive tackles in the NFL. Maybe they're not watching him. They're not game planning for him on a regular basis. So are we wrong or are they wrong? It's sort of where I was going with this.
I think it's not necessarily that one is wrong and the other's right. it's about how we see it. You know, how close are we to the actual, you know, situation? And we're very close. But even though we're very close, we don't look at players, at least, you know, a lot of us, some of us try to, but we don't look at players the way coaches and scouts look at players. We look at players, and I'm saying we as every, like, the masses. We look at people based upon what they did, you know, that year. Oh, you had this great year last year. This year you fell off. This year it wasn't so great, so you fell off. You're not a good player. They look at it from the metrics. You and Willie go at it from the metrics, the numbers. And this is what these scouts and coaches do as they're watching the film. So when Jeffrey Simmons comes out, there's a reason Jeffrey Simmons comes out each and every time and say, I'm double teamed. Because that's what they're saying in the meetings. They see what we're not looking at. I'm talking about the masses again. They're seeing what we're not. When we're watching the game, we're not watching the interior lineman. We're really not. Not as much. We want the quarterback to get rid of the ball very quickly and get it to the receivers. That's what we want to see. We're not trying to zero in on what the defense or what who's double teaming who and what he's supposed to do. A lot of this, we don't even know what he is supposed to do on this play. That's why, you know, when people get on Jeffrey Simmons like he's not a good player, you got to understand you don't even know half of it. You don't know if he was supposed to hit that gap. Was he supposed to, you know, take on two so the other guy can loop around him? You have no damn idea what's going on. But yet and still, we look at the numbers and say, well, he's not playing well. And we all are at fault at it.
I would take it a step further. They're looking at one number.
Yes. Sacks. That's all they're looking
and
at.
And there are so many other things a defensive tackle does besides sacks. And sacks are always great.
His sacks got to come up, yes.
Yeah, but all of these other things he grades well in. Mm-hmm. And we're going to get into the sack part of it because there's something that I don't know that anybody has brought up that I should have thought of, honestly, before this. And once again, this will be a lot like my argument for UC Soros, trying to defend him during a rough patch of an otherwise great career, which I think we can say Jeffrey Simmons is in that. He's in a rough patch of a great career. And
the team is as well.
And when you get paid a lot and the team is struggling and you're not playing as well as you can play, you get criticized. And that is 100% in bounds. But we're trying to put in context what is going on with the team and how that affects a player.
And we are going to dig into that later in the hour. But here is what Jeremy Fowler wrote about Jeffrey Simmons landing at number four on this list. By the way, the highest ranking that Simmons received was number four. The lowest ranking he received was unranked. So there were people surveyed for this list that did not have Jeffrey Simmons on their ballot, I guess you could say. And here is what Jeremy Fowler wrote. Quote, Simmons has been a staple in the top 10 due to unique power that some evaluators consider the best in the league. He has risen to as high as number two on the list because of the problems he gives opposing guards and centers. But evaluators are trying to make sense of his lack of production last season, including five sacks and nine quarterback hits, the latter of which ranked next to last in the top 10 or honorable mention categories among players who played most of or all of last season. From one NFC executive, quote, still dominant versus the run, I didn't see the same pass rush explosion. Others cut Simmons slack, noting that playing on a bad team without much support on the outside is a factor. One coach noted that Danico Autry, a Titan from 2021 to 2023 before signing with Houston as a free agent, was an underrated edge rusher next to Simmons, and that the two played off each other well. Played off
when
each other
was
well.
Healthy.
And here's the quote that we are going to get into a little bit later from an NFL coordinator. Quote, morale gets low, and it's hard to rush when you're always playing from behind. Still one of the most complete players. But that is the quote that Willie was referring to, and that is the quote that we are going to dig into in a little bit.
Yeah, because it got us going on when you're always playing from behind. Because the basic thing is when your team is behind, the other team doesn't have to pass very much.
They're going to run the football.
And so we that got us thinking, well, what do the numbers show? And we're going to share the numbers. And I do think it could give you some perspective. And this, again, is going to be couched with this. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that Jeffrey Simmons had a great year last year. This is where I want to make sure we're on the front end saying this. This was not the best Jeffrey Simmons. We haven't seen the best Jeffrey Simmons in a couple of years, really, with injuries and the way the team is done. But there are reasons to hope for a bounce back if some other things can fall in line, if the team does better.
I think you'll get the bounce back. One is because I don't think people truly understand when you're going from one defense to the next how difficult it is to to sort of mesh as the season is going because you're trying new things and then you got guys hurt on the outside. So it may, sort of take you away from what you really want to do. And everybody's learning the defense at one time. So, Denard Wilson, he can't put it all in. He can't just throw it all in and expect people to know it. It takes time for that defense. Just like the defense to me is sort of like the offensive line. The longer they play together and if they're good and if they got good players, the longer they play together, the better they become. Why? Because everybody knows their assignment and position, where they're supposed to be within that defense. There's a lot of communication. Last year, they tried to get that communication going, and it wasn't going as well. That is critical when you're trying to learn a new defense, having someone that can spit out the defense and communicate with everybody else. So, one, I think Jeffrey Simmons suffered from being in a new defense. I truly believe he did. And then, two, I think this defense for Jeffrey, I think he has to understand that this second year coming back, he and the big fella, they have to work in tandem. And they got to work in tandem so much where it's not audible. It's, okay, we see the front. We know exactly what we're doing. We're helping one another. And that's going to, I'm telling you this. Big Sweat is going to start getting more attention than Jeffrey Simmons. Why? Because he commands two blockers, and he's going to continue to get stronger and push individuals back to the quarterback. And that is going to free Jeffrey Simmons up. He's going to learn that. He's going to be able to play off that. So I think this year will be more in line with what we saw from Jeffrey Simmons in the earlier years than what we've seen in the last 2 years.
Well, let me ask you this question, Derek, because I was listening to Big Joe Dubin and Nick Frazier talk about this earlier. And we know Big Joe. He's an old school guy. Mm-hmm. And he was defending Jeffrey Simmons, saying it's not an interior defensive lineman's responsibility or his primary responsibility to sack the quarterback. It's about commanding double teams and freeing up other players to get to the quarterback. I hear that, but then I think the counter argument would be that Jeffrey Simmons is one of the highest paid players at his position in the NFL. Shouldn't we expect more from Jeffrey Simmons than taking up double teams and opening up lanes for other players, especially since the Titans, though this is not necessarily Jeffrey Simmons' fault, they didn't get to the quarterback last year. So where do you fall in that argument?
It's like this. I talk about my children a lot. If you've shown me you can give me an A, then give me an A. If you've shown me that you can give me an A in that particular class over and over again, why am I settling for B's and C's? Cause you've shown me you can do the work. So if you're giving me a B or C, something's wrong here. Don't say you can't do it or don't make any excuses. It's about you, not about them. I see it the same way with Jeffrey Simmons. He's shown us who he is. He's a 8-sack guy. That's what he is, 8, 9.5 sack guy. So if that is the case, give it to us or give us more. You've shown us the all-pro Jeffrey Simmons. They paid you for it. Now we don't want to see anything less. And I get it. That's sort of unrealistic at times. But when you set that bar high and we know you can achieve it, then we expect you to achieve it for a time period of at least 4 to 6 years. And you haven't given us the 4 years of consistent, like, that dominant play. You've given us 2 years. We're waiting on two more or possibly even three to string along. So when we see Jeffrey Simmons, you've done it. I understand what Joe is saying in a sense, but these the defensive linemen from Joe's day, my day, you know, Willie when you know, when he was a youngin', that defensive lineman is gone. You know, Big Saragusa, Sam Adams, they're big, but they expect you to get to the quarterback. Now, we didn't expect Sam Adams or Saragusa to get to the quarterback. We just expected them to eat up two blockers. And they expected Ray Lewis to shoot through the hole or one of those edge guys. But in today's defense, when you've shown us what you can do, there's no more, oh, he's not supposed to get it. Because you've shown us you can do it. When you're ranked as the fourth best interior lineman, that means you're getting sacks, so they expect you to get sacks. That's what it means.
615-737-1025. Jeffrey Simmons comes in at number four on Jeremy Fowler's list of the top defensive linemen, defensive tackles, I should say, in the NFL. Too high, too low, just right. Number four for Jeffrey Simmons. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We will continue this conversation in a little bit, but coming up next, new Predators defenseman Nick Perbix, who signed with the Predators on July 1st, a two-year contract. He will join us in the next segment. We will introduce ourselves and all of you to new Predators defenseman Nick Perbix. That's coming up next, 615-737-1025. Speaking of 1025, the game is teamed up with Pella Windows and the Nashville Humane Association for a puppy pet adoption this Saturday at Pella, 277-277 Mallory Station Road in Cool Springs from 10 to noon. For more details, visit thegamenashville.com/events. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025-1063. The game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by new Predators defenseman Nick Perbix. Perbix signed a two-year contract with the Predators in free agency, and he joins us now. Nick, thank you so much for your time. Welcome to Nashville. How are you?
Good. How are you?
We are doing well. So let's talk about your free agency experience. As you weighed your options in free agency, what were the most important aspects you were looking for in a team, and why did the Predators check off the most boxes?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you just kind of want to go somewhere where you're wanted. They value you high, and then I believe that this team has the roster to do something. Obviously they didn't make the playoffs last year, but I believe that make a playoff run. And so, that was important also.
How much did you rely on your old teammate, Steven Stamkos, in making this decision? How much did you ask him about Nashville? How much influence would you say he might've had in this decision?
Yeah, I mean, it was good to obviously just have someone like him, someone you played with at the time in Tampa. He was a captain of mine. Just know he's on the roster, know that level of comfort going into a room, and so knowing that you'd have someone like that was definitely appealing for sure.
I'm curious about this, Nick. There has been a lot of discussion with, of course, the Lightning and now the Panthers winning so many championships in recent years. There has been a lot of discussion in the NHL about the no state income tax advantage that the Panthers have, the Lightning have, and the Predators have. How much did Tennessee's no state tax status influence your decision in signing with the Predators?
I mean, obviously at the end of the day, it is a job here. So the more money you can make, I don't think anyone is going to say no, but at the end of the day, you do want to win a championship, and that's kind of the number one thing in all of our eyes. So yeah, I guess to answer your question, had something to do with it, but it wasn't everything.
Nick Purvis. Perbix is with us. He is a brand new member of the Nashville Predators. And, you know, one of the things that we talk about a lot, Nick, that it's hard for people that haven't played hockey to understand is the right shot versus the left shot. And obviously, you being a right shot, it makes you a little bit more unique. It's almost like a left-handed pitcher in some ways. How would you explain it, why there are so many more left shots than right shots in hockey?
Honestly, I've kind of asked that myself because I feel like everyone in the world is a right-handed person that you meet, at least when they pick up a pencil. So I don't know why left shot is so much more common, but honestly, I don't mind it being a right shot. value goes up a little, and so it just comes to benefit me, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and you grew up in Minnesota, and of course, they call it the state of hockey for a reason. But I always like asking people from your state just to try to tell people down here just how big high school hockey is up there, because you know, high school football just rules the roost down here, as you'll find out, which if you don't already know, of course, you spent some time in Tampa. They play some high school football down there. But the unique culture of high school hockey in Minnesota, it's pretty special.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of said it, it's just the number one thing. I mean, I remember growing up, for me, as much as I'd love to say, I mean, and it was still a dream to play in the NHL, like the number one dream was just to win a state championship, a high school state championship, kind of that dream of going to play where the Wild play. At the time, it was the XL Energy Center. I think they renamed it. I don't even know what it is now. But yeah, that was the dream. And then later on, honestly after high school, it was kind of when the focus shift on the goal of making the NHL, winning a Stanley Cup, kind of became more valued than what you would normally think, I guess you can say.
Yeah, and you decided to play your college hockey up there as well. And college hockey is also something that I think over the years, our market here in Nashville has learned a little bit more to try to, you know, follow that programs like St. Cloud State. You know, it's not in the Big Ten per se, but you play with the big boys up there. What was that experience like?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's part of the NCHC, which is kind of actually only just a hockey conference, whereas the Big Ten's football, basketball, and all the major sports, where, I mean, I feel like half the schools in the NCHC are, the only D1 sport is hockey. And so, yeah, it's a hockey-based conference. And, I mean, I don't know what the stat is now, but I know when I was in school, I think we had won like 4 out of 5 or something like that. And so, yeah, definitely good hockey. A lot of players coming from there. And with that new rule change in college hockey, I'm sure many more will be coming from college hockey.
Well, that is a good point for sure. We're going to see a change there. What was the toughest adjustment for you going from college to pro?
I think the biggest thing I noticed was, at least being a defenseman in college, if you'd make a little mistake in the D zone, you had the ability to kind of either make up for it or neutralize it. Whereas in pro, if you make a mistake in the D zone, it's almost always a chance within 2 or 3 seconds. And so you just gotta focus on that.
You were considered, you know, sort of an under the radar guy. You know, we Adam and I like to look at some of the analytic numbers. You did very well there. How much do you think you improved from the time you entered the league until the, you know, this past season with the experience you gained?
I mean, I think it's just kind of a reps thing. Everyone, the more reps you get at something, with this, in this case, being pro, kind of getting into a routine, kind of finding out what works best for me. And so, like, it's just kind of going to come naturally if you actually have the right intent behind everything. And so, yeah, just kind of with time, you're just kind of, I don't want to say bound to improve, because you got to focus on the right things, but it'll come if you put in the work and stuff.
And of course, playing in a winning culture like Tampa, then Adam asked you about Steven Stamkos, of course, and those were teams that will be remembered for a long time that you played for. How do you define the culture of Tampa Bay? What sets them apart in your mind?
I mean, I guess one thing, I don't know if this is the perfect way of saying it, but winning is expected and the playoffs are expected. And so it's not like a meant to be sounding like a daunting thing, but it's just everyone, that's the goal for everyone. But at the same time, like, if you're expecting that, I feel like it just kind of comes more naturally, whereas you're not surprised when you get there.
Nick, we've talked a lot about the team, the Predators' struggles last year, and the philosophical discussion of, are the Predators going to change the way they play, change the way they defend? They certainly struggled in that area last year. And you, of course, are a big part of it. Nick Hague is going to be coming in, bigger guys. And I'm just wondering what the talks have been like for you of how Andrew Burnett and Barry Trotz have discussed how the team wants to go about it next year. What's that been like for you?
Honestly, we haven't really got into many of the X's and O's of what the changes will be, haven't got into what last year exactly was like with it being in the Western Conference and me playing in the Eastern Conference. I don't know a crazy amount about it other than when we'd quick do the summary of when we were the pre-scout of when we'd play these guys. And so, I mean, bad answer maybe, but yeah, I don't have an answer right now because I don't totally know. That'll come.
Nick, I know that in Tampa you had an opportunity, many opportunities, to play on the same pair as Victor Hedman over the years. How did that experience help you grow as a player? And were you at any point starstruck when you first broke into the NHL and had an opportunity to play with a defenseman who is bound for the Hall of Fame when his career is over?
Yeah, no, honestly, he did a great job of like kind of making everyone feel welcome in those aspects. And so when I was actually in his presence, I wouldn't necessarily notice it, but obviously playing with him, the game's a lot easier when you play with, like you said, a future Hall of Famer. But where I'd notice it is when you'd go out in public and stuff and you'd see the signs of him and people wearing his jerseys and stuff and then kind of realizing, oh, wow, that is my D partner. I play with that guy. And I mean, the Stamkos is kind of the same thing. That's when you realize kind of what kind of privilege you have. And so, I mean, here there are many guys like that too.
New Predators defenseman Nick Perbix joining us on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Nick, thank you so much for your time. I know that you've got some house hunting to do. I hope that you can find the perfect place for you and your family. Welcome to Nashville, and I'm sure we'll touch base through the course of the season.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Nick Perbix joining us on the program. Interesting guy. I liked it.
I'm curious how, you know, he's a guy that played a lot of college hockey, I think 4 full years, if I saw this right. Was not a high pick. Yeah, four years at St. Cloud State. Sixth-round pick. But made it to the NHL pretty quick as a regular. And I think it's fair to say each year he's strengthened his profile a little bit. As you mentioned, he didn't play as much on the first pair with Hedman last year because they shook things up. They brought Ryan McDonough
you
back,
have to
as
keep,
we know.
You have to keep that in mind. I thought this was pretty funny. Jared, in reaction to the signing of Nick Perbix, said, hold on a minute. This guy is a right-handed defenseman who played with Victor Hedman, and he was only able to receive a 2-year deal worth less than $3 million per season. Something must be wrong with this guy. And was looking at his ice time. And I said, you have to keep in mind, who came back? Ryan McDonough. Ryan McDonough took a lot off of Perbix's plate last season. He took a lot of defensemen's plate in Tampa last season. So I think that's important context to keep in mind when you're digging into the numbers. But as you said, Willie, you and I love to dig into the numbers, and we will continue to dig into the numbers of Jeffrey Simmons here in just a few minutes. But his profile is of a steady, solid defenseman. There may not be something he does exceptionally well, but he does a lot of things well. That would be my description of Nick Perbix based on his analytical profile.
He does have steady analytics, which is something that a lot of people look at. And there are some defensemen in the league, and I think Nick Hague probably falls into this category, at least from an offensive standpoint, that while they are very well respected up and down the league and quote unquote hard to play against, it doesn't always translate to good analytics. Perbix is 6'4", but his analytics are good. So he does a lot of little things that probably don't show up. You're not going to be wowed by goals and assists. And I think we're all curious of how the partners end up shaking out. And I'm sure on this day, July 9th or whatever it is, or July 8th, that they aren't sure who's going to end up being the pair. I think you could have a theory that, for example, Brady Shea and Roman Josi might be a good pair, and that was anything but the case last year. And who knows? Maybe next year Shea and Josi end up playing better together. But I think they've got some flexibility. They know that Perbix will be on the right side with somebody, whether that's Shea or Josi. And then Hague can play the left side and the right side. Josi can play the left side and the right side. You've got Nick Blankenberg, who they already know had some good chemistry with Brady Shea. The wild card, of course, is Tanner Molendijk. And then maybe the second wild card is Barron, right? Is I think Barron could definitely be on the right side of the third pair, and you've got a guy that's got some skill, some really high-end skill at times, and you can continue to bring him along slowly. And maybe he makes a jump and he could play on a second pair. We'll see. But there's I think, more avenues and flexibility of what to do with the six guys or seven guys than last year when they had Carrier got hurt, Lazan got hurt. When they were together and healthy, they didn't play very well. Shea and Yossi didn't mix at all. They had a lot of problems from the get-go that threw their whole defensive scheme out of whack. I think they have a better chance of getting off to a good start this year. But the big question I think we both have, Adam, is what is the defensive system going to be compared to last year? Are they going to play a little bit more stay at home, protect the house, and not quite as innovative, get the puck moving, et cetera? That remains to be seen.
615-737-1025. We thank Nick Perbix for joining us. Looking forward to hockey season in, 3 months. We'll have NFL training camp here soon enough, and we will get back into Jeffrey Simmons. Again, number 4 on Jeremy Fowler's list of the top 10 defensive tackles in the NFL, according to the league people he surveyed. There was something that was said in the blurb, I guess you could say, of Jeffrey Simmons that we've pounced on. And speaking of crunching numbers, it was like a bat signal for me. So I did some research this morning, and we will get to that coming up next. 615-737-1025. You can also let us know if you think Jeffrey Simmons is properly ranked, too highly ranked, or not ranked high enough. Let us know. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025, 1063, The Game. Hey, the Borchetta Bourbon Music City Grand Prix is coming to the Nashville Super Speedway Labor Day weekend, and 1025, The Game has your chance to win VIP tickets to the IndyCar race by texting in the keyword race, R-A-C-E, now to 615-737-1025 to be entered to win a pair of VIP tickets. For more information on the event, visit musiccitygp.com, musiccitygp.com. So, Jeffrey Simmons is number 4 on Jeremy Fowler's list of the top 10 defensive tackles in the NFL. Again, according to Fowler, he surveys league executives, coaches, and scouts to help rank the top 10 players at 11 different positions. Here is the rankings process. Voters gave Fowler their 10 best players at a position. Then ESPN compiled the results and ranked candidates based on number of top 10 votes, composite average, and dozens of interviews with research and film study help from ESPN NFL analyst Matt Bowen. In total, more than 70 voters submitted a ballot on at least one position, and in many cases, all positions. Additional voting and follow-up calls with those surveyed helped break any ties. So Jeffrey Simmons, number 4 on the list. And there was a quote at the bottom from an unnamed NFL coordinator. This about Jeffrey Simmons, quote, "Morale gets low and it's hard to rush when you're always playing from behind. Still one of the most complete players." Now, Willie read that and said, I wonder about that particular quote. And I wonder about how often the Titans were playing from behind. And like a bat signal in the sky, except it wasn't a bat. It was more like an abacus, maybe a calculator. I said, I'm on it. I'm going to do it.
Let's go.
That might
be
the first time in history a bat has been compared to an abacus. In any way.
I forgot to mention last week that I did come up with a new name for the Robbie and Rex Road program. Goutman and Robbie. Instead of Batman and Robin, Goutman and Robbie. So I enlisted Ian.
Oh, my goodness.
I enlisted Ian to come up with a da-na-na-na-na-na-na, Goutman, Goutman. All right, sorry about that. I just had to.
Joe, man.
Poor Joe.
Goutman. Joe, you just catch him. It doesn't matter, but go ahead.
Goutman and Robbie, if you're looking for a new name, guys. So I went about this a couple of different ways, but here is the most interesting thing I found. So I compared Simmons last season to Simmons from the 2021 season, which was his breakout season. He had 8.5 sacks, which is still a career high. I believe he was a second-team All-Pro that season. So last season, Jeffrey Simmons played 773 snaps. And I looked at how many he played when the Titans were ahead, how many he played when the Titans were behind and how many he played when the Titans were tied, and then looked at the percentage. So last season, 35.2% of Jeffrey Simmons' snaps came when the Titans were leading. 35.2%. 49%, so about half, came with the Titans trailing. And 15.8% came when tied. So again, 35.2% of Jeffrey Simmons' snaps last season came when the Titans were protecting a lead. Compare that to 2021, when he played 51.1% of his snaps when the Titans were ahead. So 51.1% in 2021 when the Titans were leading versus 35.2% this past season. So I thought that was quite interesting, looking at the discrepancy, the disparity, whatever word you want to use, looking at the number of snaps Jeffrey Simmons played when the Titans were leading 4 years ago, 3 years ago, versus last season. A difference of 16 percentage points, a huge gap.
Huge gap. I look at it this way, just to try to put it in as simple terms as possible. I feel better about the sack number because we get hung up on number, and D-Mace is always talking about that it's much more about the percentage. Are you winning your matchup? There's all these things we have now that can tell us these things. But there's still always going to be a romance with the sack number. But his sack number last year was what, five?
Five.
And they faced how many passes?
According to the NFL, Titans opponents ran 505 pass plays, the fewest in the NFL.
Fewest in the NFL.
By a margin of 34. The next closest team, the Washington Commanders, at 539.
And that really doesn't have to do as much with the run defense versus the pass defense. It's simply that when you're behind, in general, in football, I don't care if you're playing high school, college, or pro, you are more apt to run the ball when you're ahead because you want to keep the clock running. You don't want to take as much risk. It's very simple, fundamental football. So when you're constantly behind, the other team isn't needing to pass that much. So if I am a pass rusher and I get 500 chances, and of course he's not in on every play, but let's just say there are 500 chances I have to get a sack. Mm-hmm. And Derek plays on a team where he has 600 chances to get a sack. Well, you do the math, it's a lot easier for Derek to get three or four more sacks than I get. So it's because he has 100 extra chances to get sacks than I do. That's simply opportunity. And the more times you're out there, it's like a guy that has 600 at-bats and has 30 home runs versus a guy who has 300 bats at-bats and has 30 home runs. Who's the better power hitter? It's the guy that has the 30 home runs and 300 at-bats. But they're both, quote, 30 home run hitters. So I never thought of that. I probably should have, but I feel a little bit better about the sack number than I did before. And as I said at the beginning of the show, this isn't to say that that was a great year by Jeffrey Simmons by any stretch, but that is a little context as to why that sack number was so low.
And by the way, Derek, so as I said, Titans opponents ran 505 pass plays last season, by far the fewest in the NFL. The league average, and I had to use my abacus slash calculator and add all of this up and then divide it by 32. The NFL average was 598.
98. Okay, so that's
598.
So after, let's say that the three of us, we're playing on the defensive line, an awesome defensive line. Donick, Bingen, and Mason. And we'll throw David in. We got to have a front four, right? Yeah. So let's get David in there. So after 500 passes, we all have five sacks. Mm-hmm. But now D-Mace gets 100 more chances to rush the quarterback. Who's going to lead the team in sacks?
Probably Derek.
Right. Yeah. So see, I mean, so if he just gets three more, then I think we would probably. So if Jeffrey Simmons had three more because they had 600 passing attempts instead of 500, we might feel a little bit better about the sack number because we get so hung up on the sack number.
One more number for you, Derek. Again, so the number The Titans' opponents ran 505 pass plays last season. In 2021, because that was the season I isolated, Titans' opponents ran 671 pass plays. So the year that Jeffrey Simmons had a career high in sacks, Titans' opponents ran 166 more pass plays.
So you're going to get more sacks. You're just by math, by stump, just by being out there, you're going to stumble on a couple more sacks because they were ahead more. The other teams have to pass. And by the way, when you're ahead and the other team has to pass, how much easier does it get to rush the quarterback? Way easier.
Well, you pin your ears.
That's when you
back.
Get your sacks.
Yeah, you pin your ears back. And it's not necessarily about you being behind. It's when are you behind. That's when it really, you know, the rubber meets the road. Because if you are behind in the fourth quarter with 5 minutes left in the game, you got the ball, you're more, you know, the offensive coordinator is more apt to call pass plays. If you're down, you know,
and risky seven pass plays. Yeah,
you're
right?
Down 7 points in the first quarter, he's just going to stick to his game plan. He's going to run the football. So my whole thing with Jeffrey is not necessarily that you had 45 to 50 less opportunities. It's what did you do with the opportunities that you had? I mean, what was your win rate on the opportunities that you had? What was your win rate? Because we can continue to break this down, you know, as we go. What was your win rate when you were, you know, matched up one-on-one? What was your win rate on blitz? What was your win rate when you were double team? So all this stuff you have to break down. And if you still were not winning on your singles, you're not going to win in your doubles, you know, and your sack numbers are going to go down. But if you out there for 250 plays, and you are singled 100 times, I expect you to win 90% of those, yep, or 90% of those matches.
That's a much more important, exactly, evaluation.
Absolutely. I expect you to win. So how many of those were you winning? Those, and even those double teams, I expect you to win damn near half of those because you are an elite pass rusher. You know, I guarantee you Aaron Donald saw more double teams than probably anybody within the last 10 years.
I think I might have an answer for you.
Okay.
According to ESPN, I think this must be from last season. Jeffrey Simmons, this is DT pass rush win rate rankings. Mm-hmm. Jeffrey Simmons ranked 10th. He had 22 wins on 189 plays, a percentage of 12%. He was double teamed 59% of the time.
Okay, so
if I'm reading all of that correctly,
that has to come up. It does, you know, because you're considered an elite player.
Number one on the list, no surprise, Chris Jones.
Yes.
34 wins in 214 plays, a pass rush win rate percentage of 16%, double teamed 70% of the time.
And he that's what I'm talking about, because Jeffrey has shown us that already. So you can't show it to us and then use it as a crutch and say, well, they're double teaming me, man. It's like, dude, you are considered one of the best interior guys in the league. Jones, he 70% double team, and he's still getting.
But I think the Chiefs have a couple. There are, yeah, there the are Chiefs other things defense, going for the things, yeah, that we've talked about. The
their defense is a little better. Bit better. Yeah, coordinator, I believe he's a little bit more seasoned and better.
Yeah, they have so other that guys, yeah, that are capable. Whereas the Titans right now, they just didn't have another real threat. Mm-hmm. You know, Harold Landry, we talked about, he is who he is. He was played well to be a good rusher, but he's not the guy that strikes fear like a Javon Curse in, yes, the heyday, or, you know, the best edge rushers in the league. You're like, man, how are we going to stop that guy? The Titans just didn't have that guy, no, really. So that hasn't helped Simmons. And also, the passes that they're throwing, because they were behind so much, and remember how often they were getting behind early, mm-hmm, right? The passes that are thrown are probably going to be less risky passes with getting the ball out, mm-hmm, quicker. There's all these little things that I think make it harder for Jeffrey Simmons to get the numbers that Jeffrey Simmons, we all hope that he ends up getting.
How do you affect the quarterback without touching the quarterback? That's what, you know, we have to figure out with how is he affecting a quarterback without even touching a quarterback? And that goes to the win rates. If your win rate is high, you may not touch the quarterback. You may force him to get rid of the ball faster than what he wants to. And then what happens? The guys on the other side ends up getting interceptions. That's what I'm talking about. Your win rate on single and double blocks is crucial. I'm not asking you to get a sack every play or every double team. What I'm doing is asking you to affect the passer where your guy on the other, your guy behind you, whether it be the linebacker or the secondary guys, they benefit from it. You may not get the sack, but they get the interception or the pass breakup.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We will continue this conversation coming up next with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, and of course, head coach of the Ensworth Tigers. We'll do that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.